Velkommen til Rig på Viden, en podcast om forskning i investering, finans og økonomi. Mit navn er André Thormand.
Før vi går i gang, så skal det lige nævnes, at episoden her, den er lavet i samarbejde med Enterprise Foundations, som forsker i europæiske fondsejede virksomheder. Du skal tage og gå ind på deres hjemmeside, enterprisefoundations.dk, og så kan du læse om den forskning, de laver, og du kan tilmelde dig deres events. God fornøjelse.
Today we will focus on foundational owned companies and try to answer the simple question: does foundation ownership sacrifice financial performance? To help us with this, I'm proud to present postdoctoral researcher Fabian Ahrens. Thanks for joining, Fabian.
Thanks for having me.
Can you maybe start by telling a bit about yourself and what you do?
Sure. So right now I'm a postdoctoral researcher at Copenhagen Business School at the Center for Corporate Governance. Previously, I did my PhD in the Netherlands at the University of Groningen. And so back then, my focus has really been on like studying boards of directors, so top decision makers in firms, and especially their processes. So like, how do they work together? What are the interrelations between different people? And now, like since I joined Steen Thompson here at the Center for Corporate Governance, my focus has shifted a little bit more towards ownership topics, and that is also what I think we'll talk about today, like in terms of enterprise foundations, because it's the project that Steen is spearheading at CBS there.
Amazing. But why are you interested in enterprise foundations?
Well, I mean, there's so many things going on in the business world right now, and to be honest, like I've always been a little bit critical of capitalism, and when I got introduced, I know you work at Danske Bank, so
you're in a business school.
I know, but like when I did my master's, like I got into like more psychology because I studied like corporate management and economics, and I never was super keen on it. And then I finally realized, oh yeah, I actually want to study like how people behave, like how people work together. And so through all of that, and like, I mean, that was a small university, like a lot of hippies there. So I got introduced into like alternative forms of like making money as well. And so then I was like, when I heard the whole idea behind enterprise foundations, I was like, oh yeah, that sounds so interesting. Like a different approach to doing business, which is some research has shown, is still profitable. So I'm like, okay, like we see all these problems with hyper capitalism, with like, yeah, destroying the planet, destroying like societies even by like, I mean, look at, not to bash Instagram or any social media here, but like it's also causing some harm to the society. And so like, I'm not saying that like enterprise foundations are the solution to everything, but maybe like thinking about them and understanding what they do differently gives us some insights into what we could do differently and what also big corporations should do differently.
But don't you think that enterprise foundation is capitalist as well? I mean, some of these are started by some of the biggest capitalists in the society we have had.
Absolutely. I mean, that's the thing, like that whole structure behind enterprise foundations, it is not a non-profit. That is like, and also that's the thing, like we always try like to sell to people, like just because a foundation is in the name, it doesn't mean that it's a non-profit organization. So they are definitely for profit. And yeah, so like they still want to make money, but at the same time, they do have like this dual approach. And so what we're like, or like what the paper that I'm currently writing with Steen and JP is also about bringing further the idea that profit and purpose is not really like paradoxical. So it can go hand in hand, because I mean, even and you've probably heard of Patagonia, which is a good case. They still think in terms of like profit versus purpose. Because as, what's his name, the founder, Chouinard, he said, Earth is now our only shareholder. So it's still that shareholder-centric thinking, while some of the foundations here and across Europe and even across the world, they actually show that it's possible to make a profit and at the same time do something good for a society. For example, look at Novo Nordisk. I mean, they wanted to like cure diabetes or like health related or like obesity related issues, and what turned out to be quite successful. I mean, they're the number one in market value in Europe now, with even bigger than the luxury brand LVMH. So there's a certain appeal to it, I feel, that like you can combine purpose with profit without compromising on either of those.
That's great. Let's just start with an intro so everyone is keen on what we are talking about. So just the definition. What exactly is an enterprise foundation?
So the way we define it, it is a company which is owned by a foundation. So at least by 25% often. Often they are 100% owned by the foundation, but like we say, like 25% is the lower threshold. And so the
Is that of the capital or the votes, or how does that work?
That is a good question. Because what happens, there's private and publicly listed foundation-owned companies. So for example, Novo Nordisk, they're, don't quote me on that because I'm not sure like how many
you're
votes.
Just on a podcast.
Yeah, I mean, like I'm not exactly sure about the ownership percentages, but so as far as I know, they have the majority or almost all of the voting rights. So this is kind of a dual class share situation where like their shares have all the voting rights, and then they do give out other shares to the public. And so I also do own a couple of Novo Nordisk shares. So that's not like a paradox there. And yeah, so they like, so what the foundation gets from the company or like from owning the company is not just, I mean, that is still a different question, like whether they are active in like owning the company, like institutional investors, for example, often are. So I think like what they mostly rely on is simply getting the dividends from the companies. So I think there's another foundation, Augustinus Fonden, I think, here. And they rely mostly on buying up companies, and then like with the dividends they get from the existing portfolio of companies they have, they're trying to like buy more companies. And like this is the purpose of the foundation, more or less, creating a sustainable environment of or a sustainable portfolio of business ownership. So it's that is part of the definition, that like the foundation really has a purpose that is like given in the foundation charter. And that foundation charter is mostly written down like by the original founder of the foundation. So you mentioned Carlsberg earlier, that like, I don't recall his name, but the founder of Carlsberg, back then he had a problem that he didn't want to give the company to his sons or his daughters. I don't know.
Son.
Son, okay. And so he decided to make it a foundation, because then he could specify kind of his will in the foundation charter, what should happen for eternity, more or less, to the company. And so the Carlsberg Foundation, so there's a, like a thin line between like the foundation and the foundation-owned company that we have to draw here, because the foundation really has the purpose of fulfilling what is written in the foundation charter, and the foundation owned company at the same time, they could more or less do whatever they want. I mean, they're not necessarily bound by the foundation charter, but often like because their owner or their majority owner is the foundation, they do adhere to what they would say if they were to say anything.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. And let's talk a bit about this purpose and what purpose-driven ownership is. I mean, it sounds so good. What are the advantages and disadvantages?
Well, so first of all, I don't think there's a clear definition of purpose-driven ownership right now. Same as we don't have a proper Europe-wide or a worldwide definition of what enterprise foundations are. So this is how we define it. So as I mentioned earlier, like what we think of purpose-driven ownership is really ownership that tries to combine and not like look at only purpose or only profits, but really combine purpose and profits with each other. So I mentioned the example of Novo Nordisk. I'm not entirely sure about like what exactly is written in their foundation charter, but from what I know, they have both a charitable and a non-charitable purpose in their foundation charter. So the charitable purpose, for example, is curing diabetes. They from the dividends that the Novo Nordisk Foundation gets from Novo Nordisk, they reinvest that, so to say, a lot in hospitals, in medical research on diabetes, especially in Denmark. And especially in Denmark, it says in there. So it's quite a narrow focus. You could also say like curing diabetes worldwide or so, but that's how the founder back then specified that it should be like focused on Denmark, which is fair. But they also do fund other types of research. For example, the research that we do, because Steen, he actually is the Novo Nordisk Foundation professor at Copenhagen Business School. They do fund a lot of charitable things like research, but at the same time, what is written in their charter is that they need to like secure a stable business for Novo Nordisk company and like the other companies that they own, for example, the Novo Nordisk holding and among others. So it's, and that is clearly a non-charitable purpose. So it's continuing running the company. So the thing, like it is purpose driven to some extent, but not solely purpose driven, for example, as an NGO would be, or as like a foundation, like a charitable foundation that owns a museum, and their only purpose kind of is to get the public see artwork and like extend the art collection.
Is it possible to change a foundation charter?
It is possible. It's not that easy. So, for example, here in Denmark, there is a special authority for that. I think it's a three-step process. So you have to submit the first initial idea for that. Then it will be reviewed by some bureaucrat. Then so it's a little bit of ping pong. And through these three steps, then you can eventually change that. I mean, you couldn't go from left to right entirely, but minor changes are very well possible. And I think you had Mark Erberg here in an earlier episode. And so I think he specifically looked at changes from a more empirical perspective. And he found that there have been so many changes to foundation charters. Not really sure about the extent of the change, but it is possible to change the purpose or the charter.
I have another question in terms of what you said about to eternity, basically. I mean, I cannot figure out whether that's good or bad for shareholders, because I mean, you could have a bad company and continue to run it very bad to eternity, where the best thing for a shareholder might be to sell the company or whatever, right? I mean, what are some thoughts about that eternity thing?
Yeah, that whole eternity thing, that is it's bugging a lot of people, I feel, because it kind of sounds as if the foundation can do whatever they want and it will always exist, which is not the case. I mean, if you ruin the company, it will cease to exist. So you cannot run a company without keeping it sustainable and viable to some extent. The idea of that for eternity, part of the definition of foundations really is that it is very hard to sell to get rid of that foundation ownership. Because there's no owner to the foundation, there's no members to the foundation. Basically, the foundation owns itself. And so that is what is meant with for eternity. But it can very well be that the company which is owned by the foundation goes bankrupt, and then the foundation doesn't get dividends anymore. So they will eventually not have money to spend anymore. And so they could also cease to exist through that. So that is the whole story about this for eternity.
I lost my train of thought. Is it good or bad for shareholders?
Oh yeah, exactly. If they're public, it gives the whole company a little bit of more possibilities to look at the long term. So, I mean, I just mentioned hyper-capitalism and institutional investors, especially like in the US, shareholder primacy, Milton Friedman, all of those things coming together. The thing really is there, like, you have to adhere to the rules of the market real hard. If you don't, you will be driven out, you will be taking over, hedge funds will come in like to change things. That will not happen in foundations. So it can actually be a good thing for shareholders, because they know that the foundation will give a sense of purpose to the company, or maybe will give a certain direction to the company that always has the idea of viability, sustainability, and long-term not just performance, but also long-term relationships to all kinds of stakeholders in mind. So I personally like that idea as a shareholder, but others would probably disagree, I think.
And we'll get back to the financial performance.
Yeah.
but just a few more questions, because this is something we obviously know very well in Denmark, especially. But how does the picture look in Europe and also in the rest of the world? Where are foundational companies located, and why is it mostly in Europe, if it is?
Well, I think the easy answer is that the whole foundation construct is kind of coming from the Germanic tradition. I mean, Germany, the Netherlands, Austria, Scandinavia, they all to more or less or to a bigger or lesser extent derived from the Germanic tradition, quote unquote here. But I don't think it's really a unique thing to Europe or to Central and Northern Europe. Because, for example, we also have Tata in India, which is a big business conglomerate that is owned by a foundation. So Steen is currently working with Mark Erberg and Anne Sanders from Germany on together with the European Law Institute on coming up with a European definition of what we term foundation or enterprise foundation ownership. And so that will be the first step in homogenizing that that whole realm of foundation ownership. And hopefully that will also extend worldwide, that we might be able to plant that seed into other people's minds, and then we could potentially identify more foundations across the world. Because it might just be that they treat foundations as privately owned or public companies, and that is the distinction that they do, without taking into account that foundation ownership is still something different. And so in terms of numbers, I would also first do the distinction here, because David Schröder and Chalar Kaya, they worked a lot with publicly owned or publicly listed foundation owned companies. And what they found is that across the world, it seems that there's a little over 100, most of which are from Europe, especially the countries that I just listed. But of course, there's, I think in the data set, they have 20, 24 companies from India. Almost half of those are owned by Tata. So they are somehow foundation owned then in the end. So, but when we think of private foundation-owned companies, most of the research has been done only in Denmark. And so what we intend with the project that we're doing now is really open up the scope towards Europe. And so the data collection is still a little bit ongoing since quite a couple of months already, because it's not that easy to identify all of those. But what we currently have is around 1,400 foundation-owned companies across Europe. And then again, funnily enough, it's the same countries. So because we do have a few in Spain or so, but they don't really fit the definition of foundation ownership or this enterprise foundation ownership that as we term it. So it's the Netherlands, Germany, Austria, Sweden. We excluded Denmark because Steen has already done some research there. What else? What did I miss? Oh yeah, Finland was also in there. So so we're talking about a couple of hundred, maybe 1,000, 2,000 or so. Maybe there's more. Maybe we're just missing some that don't fit our definition here, because we wanted them to be really active active businesses. So we kind of like took the very low threshold of $500,000 in assets and like 25% of a foundation ownership.
And what about like US?
Yeah, the US
is it possible?
Well, like Mark could tell you much more about the legal side there. I just know like some anecdotes and examples. One that has been existing for quite a while is Hershey's, the chocolate bar or like the chocolate company. They are actually like kind of an enterprise foundation. And I don't know like too much about the structure that's going on there in the back. But Patagonia is also like a very recent example. But apart from that, there's not too many. For a quite simple reason that in the 70s or 80s, that whole foundation model was more or less outlawed by the US government because it had been used quite a lot for tax evasion.
Is it as well in Europe? Are there any tax benefits of having foundations?
That is often like a thing that people expect because like, I mean, like a foundation is a not-for-profit organization, but they do not... because they get dividends from the companies that they own, and the companies are taxed just as any other company. So they don't get any tax benefits. The only tax benefit that a foundation really gets is at the point of a foundation. So that is tax-free, I think. The donation of the assets from the founder to the foundation, that is tax-free.
The assets from the founder to the foundation, that is tax-free.
So like, for example, Carlsberg's founder, like when he wanted the Carlsberg Brewery to become a foundation owned, he set up the foundation.
Yes.
And like, so that the foundation can actually operate in any way, they need a little bit of assets. Yeah. And I know it from Germany, like that, for example, to start a limited company, you need 25,000 euros.
Yeah.
So I don't know what the amount is, but like, so you need a little bit of cash on your hand because without cash, like no organization can really exist. What then the founder did is that he donated all the assets of the Carlsberg Brewery to the Carlsberg Foundation, and through that they get a larger stock of assets. And this is also like the whole eternity thing. That was his will, now it's gone. So the foundation could eventually decide to sell off parts of its portfolio or to sell off the company, which I think in the special case of Carlsberg is not possible because the charter specifies that they have to run the Carlsberg Brewery and make sure that beer is accessible to everyone or so.
Now I'm just asking because something interesting happened in Denmark not long ago, because Novo Holdings have so much money. They have all the money in the world, right? And they bought this company, I think it was called Catalent or something, recently, which was like helping with production or whatever, because there is a lack of production opportunities in Novo Nordisk, something like that. Can the foundation also with some benefits buy companies and help the companies they own? The other way around, basically, are there any possibilities of that?
Well, I wouldn't say no to that, but for example, Augustinus Fonden, as I mentioned earlier, their idea is to like buy and hold companies, so they to have a portfolio. And now that you asked that question, it actually made me think. This whole like non-charitable part of the foundation charter of Novo Nordisk with like providing like the basis for a stable business at Novo Nordisk and at Novo Holding. Maybe that is part of it, so that the foundation kind of like could say, oh yeah, like with our dividends, we're investing in this and that company just to expand the portfolio. And it might give the companies that we already have some kind of competitive advantage or like create some synergies or so, which would be active ownership. But I'm not really certain about that particular case.
You should look into it. It was quite recently quite big an acquisition.
What was the name of the company again?
Catalent.
Catalent, okay. Never heard of that. But yeah, I'll look into it. That sounds interesting.
All right. I think we have been speaking enough about just the topic in general. We also need to speak about the paper you're currently writing together with Steen Thompson and Jørgen Peter Theisen about basically the financial performance of private foundation-owned firms. Yeah. Why did you write this? So why are you writing this?
So as mentioned before, a lot of research has been done on public foundation on companies by my colleagues, but then also Steen. I mean, he's been working on that topic for more than, about 30 years, I think.
He's the grandfather of
Intrapress Foundation. He's the foundation person, yeah. Like all over the world. He is known for that. He started out also especially looking at Danish privately owned and Danish publicly owned foundation owned companies. So through David and Charler, they extended that to worldwide. And so now, if you think about a matrix of that has international and Denmark and then public and private, the puzzle piece that is still missing is international and private. So that was the initial idea that we had with that project. And so that's why the title, it's a working title, I would say, is still the financial performance of private foundation-owned companies. But it actually, especially in the last couple of weeks, turned into a little bit of a different story, because we don't want to just compare the financial performance, but we actually want to look more into this purpose-driven ownership, as we then term it. So yeah, that has become the new idea, and I'm currently writing the paper. Still a little bit of data collection underway because we always run into problems with databases, with information that is not there, and we really need that. So sample sizes vary a lot. So sometimes it's not that much fun to do research on that, because it's such a nitty gritty process to get the data that you need.
And what's your theory? I mean, is it that financial performance is better or worse? I mean, can you explain a bit more?
So if you follow the economic thinking, and I mentioned Milton Friedman in the beginning, then you wouldn't expect that foundations can actually perform financially to the same extent as other companies would. Simply because that thinking really was in that paradoxical space of you can either have purpose or profit. So the idea of Milton Friedman is really this goal-based purpose, so that companies, they have the purpose of making money. They're in the money business. And so that's also the whole idea of shareholder primacy. So they should make more money, because more money makes the shareholders happier. Then there's this duty-based idea of purpose, which means you have a duty to do something good for society, for the environment, for whatnot. But that could also be only focused on this duty. And the interesting space that is created there is really the combination of those, as I mentioned earlier, not treating them as a paradox, but treating them in combination and as something that could propel each other. And so why we also changed the idea from only looking at the financial performance towards looking more at the purpose ownership kind of idea of the foundation ownership is because in the last couple of years, a US scholar, Claudine Gartenberg, she has done a number of studies on the combination of purpose and profits. And just one of her most recent papers is, I think it's titled "The Contingent Relationship Between Purpose and Profits." And so she actually looked at the purpose clarity among employees in a lot of companies in the US. So I think she had 1.5 million employees or so, which is quite a significant number. I mean, not by US standards, but by European standards, that's quite a lot of people. And so what she then identified also with George Serafim in another paper. So first part is that there seems to be a difference in how strongly purpose and profit are positively or negatively linked between publicly listed companies and private companies. So this is the first thing that they found out. I mean, they found out many different things, but I'm just trying to boil it down here. And the second thing that they found out is that apart from this idea of committed ownership, as they term it, because yeah, when you look at the publicly listed companies, they have like many owners. Like any one of us can own like a little bit of them. They might have like one central owner, like in terms of like an institutional owner or a family or whatever. But mostly it's dispersed ownership. But then like when you go to private companies, they often have more committed owners. So like in terms of like, oh yeah, a family that owns more than 50% or like in our case, a foundation or so. So this like continuum between on like in terms of committed ownership it was really important in what they found. And then the second thing what they found is really more of a strategy idea. So that in some industries, yeah, the link between purpose and profit is more positive than in others. So they had like 15 different, I think that was also only Claudine's paper. She had 15 different industries, something like utilities being very in the on the lower end because yeah, there's not a lot of R&D and intangible assets going on. But then like something like healthcare and medical and I think manufacturing was in the middle, but like, so she really try to distill there like what are like some of the strategies that could, or like, I mean, I'm terming it a strategy here because I think like investing a lot in R&D or in intangible assets really is kind of a strategic approach to like how you do business. So and she identified that like where there's more intangible asset reliance and more R&D intensity in those industries, it seems like the link is stronger between purpose and profit and more positive than in others, which is an interesting effect because like we always treated it as first a paradox and now it shows like they are actually somewhat related and that relation differs depending on other contextual factors. So and that made me think in terms of our paper because then I was like, oh yeah, like foundations, they are really seen as committed owners. I mean, Colin Mayer, like he publishes a lot on this whole like purpose idea. He's driving that really out into the world. And he has been here numerous times, like also mentioning foundations as like really committed owners. So I was like, okay, we have a data set of like foundation-owned companies matched with other private companies, both in Claudine's thinking more like in the area of more committed owners, but then like probably there's also some differences between regular private companies and foundation-owned private companies. And so that is what I'm or what we're trying to use there. So
can you maybe elaborate a bit more on the data, just to be sure?
Okay, so we looked at as mentioned earlier, like we looked at the 25% shareholdings of a foundation as like that's the main criterion, and then we try to identify those companies across Europe that match this criterion, and based on that, we looked at those companies and thought, okay, like let's identify companies that are very similar, and I mean like so similar that they have the same industry code. So there's the standard industrial classification codes that we use here, and not even like on the level of the foundation-owned company, but if the foundation-owned company, for example, is a holding company, then we also look at the subsidiaries, so at the companies that they own and match those like in terms of the SIC codes. And so using that and the total assets in 2013, we try to identify from Western and like a couple of neighboring Eastern European countries, we try to identify firms that are really a good match in 2013. Then we just thought, okay, let's follow them for 10 years and collect the data for up until 2022 and see like how the performance develops. I mean, we cannot claim any like clear causality there because I mean, problems with foundation ownership is like, they have become foundation owned many years ago. So there's no changes there. Like we can't really look into like whether foundation ownership causes differences in performance, but we can at least look at the association and try to rule out a couple of alternative explanations.
Okay. So an example could be comparing Carlsberg's performance with the Royal Unibrew,
for example. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. If yeah, I mean like yeah, that because they're operating in the same industry. I don't know about their assets, to be honest.
Different in size, definitely.
Yeah. So, but that is a good example. So, like, we look at really like foundation-owned firms that have a very close match in like another or like company. Just and thus we didn't limit it to the same country, but we looked at all of Europe because it might be that in Denmark. There is no other, I mean, like Carlsberg is publicly listed, I think. So that would naturally not be like a good fit for our study. If there were a private brewery in Denmark, how reasonable is it to assume that there's another privately owned brewery, which is not foundation owned, in Denmark with the same or like more or less the same assets in 2013? Not a very reasonable assumption. So we like opened up the scope there a little bit because like there's, and I mean, JP can tell you much more about it. He did a great job there. Like there's this algorithm like with propensity score matching. And through that, he can actually like find the closest matches to those companies.
And do you have any like preliminary conclusions? I mean, what if you look at the data right now, I know you're struggling with it, but what are you seeing?
Yeah. So, I mean, we looked at many different versions of the data and like always identified new issues with it. So, I can't say for certainty yet, but
just preliminary.
Yeah, so what we see is that there might be slight differences in terms of return on assets, so in terms of financial performance for foundation-owned companies across the sampling period. We don't see any differences in sales growth, so which both speaks against the like economic idea that foundations cannot perform well, but actually they do outperform their kind of matched peers in along some lines. But then when we turn to the combination between committed ownership and those like quote unquote purpose-driven strategies of like investing in R&D and intangible assets, we actually don't see like, and that was the idea, like to see an interaction there. So maybe like being a more committed purpose-driven owner and having like a purpose-driven strategy, those two together even like explain why you outperform others more, which we don't find. So far, like if the findings hold as they are now, and we're like still collecting some more information on them just to have like a more robust sample when it comes to that, it seems like this committed ownership approach does explain why foundations or outperform privately owned companies, and at the same time, reliance on intangible assets and reliance on R&D intensity does explain other like good ways of like making more profits or making more financial or having a higher financial performance. So, but they don't really interact with each other or like so there's doesn't seem to be a synergy between like a owner and strategy. And the question like really is like, why is that? So is it that this ownership, like there's no active ownership through the from the foundations that really like deals with the strategy, so that strategy and ownership are like really separate. So we're still like thinking about like ways to explain that, and like this will be what's happening in the next couple of weeks. Because I mean like, it's an interesting finding because based on Gartenberg's work, I would have really expected that like there's kind of like complementarity between ownership and strategy, but maybe it's that they like function on a completely different level. So more research to be done.
Interesting. So I just want to be sure I understand. So sales growth is higher or lower for foundational loan?
It's not different.
There's no difference.
No. At least there's a statistically significant difference.
Okay. Return on assets is higher
for
foundational loan than non-financial.
Yep.
Okay. And then you're looking into why is that, and then you're looking into the balance sheet and saying, okay, there is more intensity of intangible assets in foundational loan than non-foundational loan.
So yeah, we're looking for all companies, no matter whether they're foundation owned or like or privately owned. Yeah. We look at their like R&D intensity, and we don't have R&D information, which is such a huge limitation because the database simply doesn't provide it. So we're trying to proxy that with like the industry that they're working in, and we're currently trying to get our hand on like some more information that would be on the company level, but not sure whether we can do that. And so we're trying to get like an estimate of how R&D intensive or intangible asset reliant they are in every given year of the sampling period. And so like we're not really assuming that like there's a direct relationship between foundation ownership and those strategies, but we're asking the question, do foundation-owned companies, which also see, have one of those two strategies, do they outperform others that don't have that? So like, they do they also outperform other foundation-owned companies who have a low R&D strategy or a low intangible asset strategy? And the same goes for the privately owned companies. So what we would have expected is that there's this interaction effect, and I'm not sure like whether you've seen interaction plots in research studies. So it's always those two lines, and like if they cross orthogonally, that is like what do like is the textbook interaction. Mm. Because then it is like a high performance for high R&D intense and committed owners, and then low performance or lower performance for low R&D but committed owners, and vice versa for privately owned companies. Something like that would have been awesome, but that's just not how research works, because like you barely ever find those clear cut interactions, and we actually find no interaction whatsoever.
Great. I think that was it.
Okay.
Do you have anything? Is there anything we forgot?
Well,
anything you wanted to say?
No, I think that has been it. And I mean, like, the, like also our conversation now made me think of this whole idea of active ownership. And I just talked to Mark Erberg 2 days ago because we're like thinking about doing a project together. And we also talked about active ownership. And so it might be really that there's something more to that. So yeah, thanks for having the conversation and like making me think about like our findings more.
I mean, it's interesting to have eyes on Novo Holdings these days, right? Because Novo Nordisk is performing so good and generating so much money. What will they do with all that money, right?
Yeah, exactly. They should spend it wisely.
Thank you so much for coming.
Thanks for having me.
Tak for at du lyttede med til Rig på Viden. Jeg håber, at du lærte noget. Og hvis du nu synes godt af vores podcast, så kan du støtte os ved at følge den på Spotify eller skrive en anbefaling på iTunes. Inden på LinkedIn, der kan du følge André Thormand, Benjamin Tomofen eller Henrik Fode Rasmussen. På genhør.